Welcome to the 12-Step Recovery Evolution podcast. Visit recoveryevolution.co.uk for more episodes, helpful resources, and links to our social media. Also visit the site for information on how you can attend a future Zoom session or workshop live. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. Good to see everybody. Yeah, I didn't get to go on my bike ride this morning, so this is a bikeless ride version of me. It might be a little bit more aggressive, who knows? Haven't not been on my bike ride for a while, but I'm looking forward to going this afternoon, whether it rains or not, because I do like that bike ride. I do find that when I'm anything that makes me relax, and I didn't think bike riding would make me relax, but I notice that anything I do in this world that makes me relax, that's positive, my mind clears and I start getting this, you know, what I'd consider the higher mind, or, you know, I start feeling that, I start listening to a lot more positive thoughts and I get better revelations, and I always really feel like I learn something when I'm on my bike ride, but it's the relaxing bit. Now, I did have a few conversations yesterday. I bumped into Heidi and Bryony. I don't think Bryony's here this morning. And I talked to some people on the phone. And it was nice to hear the feedback. So I always have a bit of concern that, you know, thumping the big book's going to be a little bit controversial, driving people away. Now, sure, some people are going to feel that, but the feedback from most people is I'm not going too overboard with it, even though it is quite full on. But hopefully you can see it's what I'm reading out of the book and giving my spin on it. And there's always going to be that. You know, if you don't agree with what I'm saying, that's fine. I'm only giving you my point of view based on my experience and the way that I read the book. Again, I am a more religious member, so I do tend to use the word God, but you don't have to. And tomorrow, I was thinking of doing a bit of a talk around God and the chapter to the agnostics. We can have a little bit of a deeper look into that tomorrow. I thought was quite good because we haven't really sort of gone into that. But from the conversations yesterday, one of the things I think Heidi was sort of talking about was she'd like to know a little bit more about infantry. And I think sort of Bryony was sort of expressing that she sort of did feel a little bit possible concern that how does she know if she's doing enough to stay sober. And I can see that can be sort of one of the dangers when you're sort of being as prescriptive as, and again, I'm not trying to be prescriptive and saying you have to follow this perfectly letter by letter. But, you know, again, the way it was explained to me, I think from a Joe and Charlie, actually, in 1991, I went to see Joe and Charlie, the original ones. And for those of you who don't know who they are, they're like these couple of guys that sort of break the big book down and you can go for these weekends, and they're great weekends, and they talk you through the book. And that weekend was very profound for me. It kind of made the big book kind of come alive, which again, we're sort of attempting to do with you guys and with everybody else, and share the message contained in the big book. It really was a life-changing moment for me. It really did make it go from a book that I could barely read, because I could barely read at the time, to really having some real powerful significance to me and making great sense, which kind of attracted me to it and made me then want to learn it more and still doing that today. But one of the things they said there, the way they tried to explain this, you know, about the doing the program as it's written in the book and not doing it, they likened it to like coffee. They would say that if you get a spoonful of coffee and put it in a cup, and the coffee kind of represents the program, and then you tip water on it, you water it down. But if it's only in a cup, you know, just a regular cup, that you're going to get a cup of coffee, and if that's your desired outcome, then all's good. But then you move it up to a jug, and then you get the same spoonful of coffee that you need to make a cup of coffee and make it work, and put it in the jug, and then fill the jug up with water. And, you know, most jugs are sort of 2 to 4 pints. You've diluted it down 2 to 4 times. you probably can still sort of see the coffee in it, and there may even be a little aroma of it and maybe a little bit of taste that the coffee might be in there. But then you put that same spoonful of coffee in a bucket and then fill the bucket up with water, well, there's not going to be any coffee in there that you're going to notice whatsoever. And it's saying it's the same with the program. It's like, you know, what strength does it stop working for you? But what strength does it stop working for you? So when you're sort of banging on and trying to get people to do it to the best of their ability, or as it's written, you're trying to make sure that they're getting enough strength, because again, you want it to resolve their problem. So it's so kind of like with Bryony saying that, then it kind of made me think that I'm going to go back to the book when I get home and have a look and see if I can answer them questions from the book. And so, and the same for Heidi and some of the other people that I talked to yesterday. Some of these answers in this bit, I realise, are in the book. And I'm always glad about that. I'm always glad that when people are asking me questions, that I'm giving you answers that are in the book. And again, I often challenge people to do that. If you hear me ever make some profound statement or declaration, you're more than happy to ask, where'd you get that from? Or how did you come to that conclusion? I mean, I do that a lot with people because, people often say to me, you don't have to explain yourself. And it's like, no, I'm not explaining myself in the sense of, I'm just telling you how I come to that conclusion, because I like sharing with people. I spend a lot of my life doing that and saying, look, this is what I believe the conclusion is to this problem. And this is how I come to that conclusion. What do you think? Now, I'm not completely sold on most of this stuff. So if somebody gives me some better information, I'll happily abandon what I believe and, take on board what I've just learned. You know, over the years, people often say to me, you just want to be right. And it's like, well, who wants to be wrong? I mean, you've got to be some idiot if you want to be wrong. But I realise in our society that if you're right too often, that can cause you a bit of trouble. But again, I don't just want to be right just for the sake of being right. But the same as Bryony was saying now, my life depends on this. And other people's life depend on what I'm telling them. And I don't want to tell them about the weak coffee. But again, if you want weak coffee, then it's up to you. I'm a believer that, it's only my job to carry the message. I can't carry the individual. And so if you're not interested in the message in this book or the way I'm conveying that, that's fine. And it is a suggested program. You don't have to do it. But I think, as we proved a couple of podcasts ago, if you don't do it, you're probably not going to get the benefits from doing it, which, again, ain't rocket science to me. But it's amazing how many arguments you can end up in with that logic. So anyway, I'm looking at page 84. It's into action. And it's saying, this brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory. So, when we're doing step 4, that's kind of like the first attempt. So people say, do you keep doing step 4s? And I guess, there's no real rule. And if you did it exactly like the book, you'd probably only do it once. But, I don't think it's necessarily written that way. It's just the way that it is written. Some people think they stop and do a step 4 every year. Now, again, it ain't going to hurt you. I try and tell people doing this program ain't going to kill you. I know that sometimes that's the impression given, that doing this program is going to kill you. But the only thing going to die when you do this program is self. That's what I learned. The only thing going to die when you do this program is self. Selfishness, self-seeking, self-pity, being greedy, being fearful, being full of anxiety. There was this guy in, I lived in Germany for a year in Berlin, and part of that time was in Berlin. And there was a guy there, his name was Hardy, and he was just the funniest guy, but he was proper into the big book and a proper extremist, but proper funny. But he used to say, if you want resentment, then don't do what's in this book. He said, "But if you don't want resentment, do what's in this book." And so that's my message as well. If you want to be resentful, then this is going to screw it up for you. So don't do what's in this book if you enjoy being resentful, fearful, depressed, anxious. You know, this isn't the program for you. And so anyway, it says, this brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal infantry. So again, it's something that we're learning. Remember, this is saying that this is something that we're trying to build into the fabric. It's something we're trying to put into the meat of our brain. We're actually trying, because again, I believe in the brain, the problems in the center of the brain, and we're probably going to get in a little bit more of that before the end of the day, and that the brain network isn't working so well. It's probably, recovery is probably not in your brain. And that's why when you're around people in recovery, in the environment that we create, because I believe this, the environment is the solution outside and inside to a degree, that if you haven't got this environment on the inside, you need to find it on the outside, which means you need to be around people in recovery that have this information. And when they talk it, and when they keep talking it, and when they keep telling it to you, and they keep on, that outside environment starts going into your own mind. So I think that, you know, recovery is a message that we carry, because it doesn't just develop in your own mind. It's not something that people necessarily think up on their own. So I think it's something that transfers. I mean, again, my sponsor in the early days, he never knew all about the brain stuff and the neuroscience, but he did know that if you bring your head to them, if you bring your ass to the meeting, he used to say, your head follows. Now, he didn't know that that was because in that environment, when you keep hearing it and making all the connections and putting it together, that in your brain, you're developing a network. He used to call it arse Moses, like arse, your arse Moses. He said, bring your arse and your head to follow. And that's how you develop the neural network. And so, and I'm a great believer in that. I'm a great believer in, that's why I, if anyone stands there long enough, I'm going to just keep banging on at you, because I know that as I'm doing that, you're taking little bits of the program away. And again, that's kind of my dream, that one day, that when people go to the addiction services, that they're going to get a lot of this information. Now, I'm saying it doesn't necessarily have to be AA, but these principles are, belong to the universe. They're just contained in the AA book, but the principles are very important for us to be hearing all the time to start developing that process in our brain. Again, we get a little bit more to that as we go on. So it says we continue to take personal infantry, because people do ask me that question quite a lot, and I guess it's because they don't want to do it themselves. They're like, you know, do you still write infantry at night? And he's like, no, I don't. But I'd like to think that I'm doing infantry all day. And if I get to the end of the day, and I do every day, I get on my knees, and I like to do that. It's, you know, even if it's a freezing cold day and a night, and I get into bed, I'll get out of bed and I'll get on my knees. And I like to say my prayers. And I like to see what's on my mind. And, you know, you can tell if you've got a resentment, because when you wake up, whether it's 3 a.m. or 8 a.m, it's the first thing that hits you in the head. And whatever that first thing that hits you in the head, you can write that down. You don't have to wait till that night to write infantry. I mean, I love my mobile phone because I've got notes on it. And even like if I go out on my bike ride, I may stop at least 3 or 4 times and make notes. Something to come into my mind, because when I relax, something will come into my mind. And if there's things I need to do, or if there's an amend I need to make, if I should have said something, or I said something I wasn't happy with to somebody, I might want to ring them out and say, have another little chat with them about it. So it's like a continued thing, because it becomes a working part of my mind. And so it says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So again, I've been practicing that for 30 years. So I'm pretty good at it. And, you know, I'm pretty good at it when other people tell me things. then I'm just sharing what of the working part of my mind with them. But again, I don't want them to keep calling me. It's better for me to, you know, help you develop your mind. Is that give a man a fish here, feed himself for a day, give him a fishing rod, he'll feed his family for a lifetime. Well, if we give you this program, we're giving you a fishing rod. And you don't have to keep calling me then. And so I want to help you develop your fishing rod as quick as we can. And that's what the program is. So again, if I just let people keep ringing me just because give them the answers, and don't get me wrong, in the early days, and when you're doing sponsoring new people, you tend to let them do that a lot more. But I don't want people to be dependent on me. I want them to be dependent on this power inside themselves that we're trying to help you identify. Because remember, the dilemma was the lack of power. Your dilemma was the lack of power. And so that power we find inside ourselves. And that's the goal is to, you know, it's like you've got your little battery inside somewhere. We've got to get you hooked up to it so you've got your own power. Remember, step one is powerless. Lack of power was the dilemma. The power is inside you. So the program is helping you connect with the power inside you. We're not trying to get you to do any unhealthy dependency that anything outside yourself. So it says our function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And again, of this program and this process, we want to get you to understand it better. This is not an overnight matter. So, you know, nobody's just going to all of a sudden develop to any, you know, it's taken me 30 years to get 30 years in the recovery program. But it doesn't mean I didn't, you know, from day one, when I come in, I never picked up a drink from that day to this. Does that mean everything I've done from that day to this has been normal and addict and unalcoholic? No, it don't. It means there was a very great effect felt right at the beginning, and the development still carrying on as I go. But again, I don't suffer from the, at least from the alcohol problem, and haven't for 30 years. Doesn't mean I don't suffer from other problems, but I stopped suffering from that one the moment I started become willing to try this program and went to my first meeting. He said, we have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So again, it just shows that there's a growing thing to this. It says, we continue to watch for selfishness, honesty, resentment and fear when these crop up. So again, the fourth step is just the beginning of learning, really. It's saying, look, you've got all of this unlearned baggage in your life. Let's capture that because it's your baggage, and if you knew how to not have it, you wouldn't have it. So, you know, I like using that analogy of gardening. It's saying, look, your garden's full of brambles, full of weeds, it's well overgrown, it's obvious you've got a big pile of problems here, and you're not good at gardening. It makes it worse. But the way we're going to get you better at gardening is we're going to start getting you to deal with your problems. But we're not going to do it for you. We can't do it for you, but we can teach you how to deal with your problems. So, and as you start doing it, you start noticing an effect straight away. And then like that, the analogy was once you've cleared all that out, which is your step 4 and 5, then you just start picking out more weeds and noticing things. And you know, some problems are a little bit too difficult for beginners, but you know, that doesn't matter. You can, as you do with deal with the small problems, you learn to develop to deal with the bigger problems. And it says, when these crop up, again, we go into the main solution in this book, we go into prayer. I mean, every time I read through this and try and explain this, doing this Zoom meetings is, it just made me realize how even more ridiculously simple this program is. Honestly, it's kind of shocking to me how ridiculously simple this program is. If you do it, It says we ask God at once to remove them. Well, again, that's just a prayer, a simple prayer, a very powerful prayer. It's not a beggy prayer. You know, it's just asking God to remove it. He's obviously, he wants to remove it, whatever, you know, he is. He doesn't make any big terms. He don't go, well, stop doing it first. Because again, I think that's an important thing to remember. Because I think a lot of people, whether they're religious or not, they still tend to have a very religious, or can have a very religious view of God. Now, if you've got a religious view, in a certain religious view, is that you might think that if you behave, then God is going to reward you. And so the goal is, if I behave, then I'm going to be rewarded. No. Drop that idea. That's not what I believe this is saying, and I not believe that's been my experience. I don't think God's rewarding me for being a good boy. What I think's happening here is I'm getting results for my actions. I'm working in principles which are unfailing laws, which I believe God set in motion, being a more religious member. I believe God set these laws in motion, and when I follow them, I get the results, not the reward. You could look at a reward, but it's not being rewarded for being a good boy. It's being, I'm getting results based on following principles. I kind of like that because it kind of puts it a bit square on me. I didn't like it at the beginning because it made me responsible, and I didn't like that idea. So most of the consequences that I'm getting in my life are pretty much based on my actions. Not all of them, because there's a bigger picture to this, but a lot of the things that I'm in control of, I'm getting consequences and better results for the actions that I take. I take better actions today and I've got a lot of better outcomes in my life. It says, when then problems pop up, we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we had harmed anyone. So again, that's a continual thing. I'm not going to let them problems dwell in me for too long. I mean, in the early days, I'd had resentments, you know, that I'd had for like, I mean, we could probably do that now to a degree, is to say, look, who's had a resentment for a day? Who's had a resentment for a week? Who's had a resentment for a month? Who's had a resentment for a year? Who's had a resentment for 5 years? Who's had a resentment for 10 years? Who's had a resentment for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years? I mean, whoever the oldest person is here, he's probably going to go all the way back. Who still resents their parents, the first people you ever met in your life? My God, you sicko. No wonder you're mentally ill. Being resentful that long is going to make you mentally ill. I need to work on them. So holding that sort of resentment will actually make you mentally ill for a long time. So I'm not going to let that stuff dwell in my mind too long. You know, and my sponsor used to say, any longer than 15 minutes, then you're going down the wrong road. So still get stuff that can go on longer than 15 minutes. I still discover fears that I was never capable of getting my head around. And but you know, even to talking to Sonia today, I've discovered this fear that I've had all my life. But I've just really, because of the work that I've been doing and the courses that I've been going on, and you know, our Tuesday night group around dysfunction we've been looking at and talking more about dysfunction to people. And I bought a couple of books back from the centre yesterday on dysfunction. And, you know, I'm really getting more and more as the years go by into looking at dysfunction and the patterns and the behaviours and how it comes out in us. And so I've discovered this fear that only pops up in certain situations. So I wouldn't always recognise it. And they're in public situations. And so, you know, and I would say to people that, you know, all my life I've kind of had social phobias and felt uncomfortable in groups, because these phobias and fears, they're only going to come up in a certain group. And you may have that. It's like you may have it that, you know, that going into a room full of people may cause you anxiety, but then you start changing the dynamic of that room. Put somebody in there that don't like you, put somebody in there that you don't like, put two of them in there, one that fancy it and some that don't, some that, you start changing that dynamic of that room around, it's going to start hitting the issues that you've got in there. And again, you may then want to stay out of that room or not go in any rooms where there's other people, because it's going to make me feel that way. Of course, it's not the room, it's not the external environment that makes me feel uncomfortable, but that external environment reflects what's going on inside me. And I don't like them feelings, then, and I don't know how to change them internally, then I need to remember we talked about, if you can't control your emotions on the inside, then you tend to try and control them on the outside. And that can mean staying out of certain situations. And the sad thing is, a lot of us have that with love. That love is a very painful experience, so we stay out of it. And so when we deal with the internal, we can then, so again, I've just discovered some new fears that I've got that have come up because of the Zoom meeting. And now I've identified it and I accept it's me. And now I'm going to start applying or finding what thought process do I need to start changing? How can I start changing my mind? Now, what I know is that when I go into that situation that used to bother me, that the people are going to do and say what they do and say, but it won't bother me. See, that's kind of how you know when you've got over resentment, that the people that you're around are still being arseholes, but you don't care about it anymore, that it doesn't emotionally disturb you. And so they're what we're capturing. And some of the workshops that we do, and we start doing some more of them again when we can, but some of them workshops are there to help you go a little bit deeper into your recovery and be able to observe, which again, is this is a great tool for that. I don't think there's a better tool on planet Earth than this 12-step program, not a simpler one, to help you observe your responses. Because it's your responses that's causing your problems. Now, until you take responsibility, now that means until you increase your ability to respond. When you take responsibility, you increase your ability to respond. And instead of responding negatively or fearfully or angry or all the things that are not spiritual principles, we're going to have the same outcomes. But when we capture them responses and start responding based more on the principles, we get better outcomes. So I want to change my responses. I either want them to be nothing or I want them to be positive, unless in proportion to what I'm experiencing, then there is a place for aggression. There is a place for getting a bit angry. There is a place for some of them responses, but in correct proportion. But I want them to be in, I want more spiritual responses in my life, but I have to capture them once. So I'm looking forward to this new freedom. It's going to open up new avenues of reality, like we talked about. I'm going to be able to do things I've never done before, or I'm going to be able to do things that I've always done, but I'm going to be a lot more comfortable doing it, which is nice. That's what I'm looking for. But, you know, if I'm not comfortable, I'm still going to do it if it's the right thing. It's not all about being comfortable, you know. So it says, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Now, again, I think this is still when we're sort of developing this ability and we're getting in self, we can still use that tool of looking to somebody to get out of self. It says, love and tolerance of others is our code, and we cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. The sanity is that, like that idea that sanity comes from the Greek words of sanitize, it's to clean. When we clean up our thinking of wrong motives, we start getting them higher thoughts coming and we start acting on them. says we're seldom interested in liquor. I don't really think about alcohol. I mean, I can't even remember the last time I kind of had a problem and thought, oh, I need a drink or a drug or anything like that. I'm surprised how often, but probably in the last, 5 years, that something happened that hadn't happened to me before. And I felt quite anxious, and I did think it was funny how the idea of a cigarette come in my head, which I thought, man, that was a bit of a strange one. But so you might find stuff like that happening. But again, it's no big deal. It said, if we are tempted, we recall from it like a hot flame. So when you actually start, doing this, and that can be almost immediate. The fact that you're like, I don't want to drink. I don't want to take a drug. You kind of know your program's starting to take hold, but it still should be developed. You shouldn't be resting on your laurels. He said we react sanely. Now, sanely for me as an alcoholic and an addict is not to drink and take drugs. Do you realize that the most insane moment in your life is not when you're on drugs and you take a drug, but the most insane moment in your life is when you're not on a drug or not drinking and then you decide to drink. In that moment, you're in complete insanity because you know what's going to happen. It says we react sanely and normally. There you go, straight from the big book. You act normally. We become like the other people in that sense. Because there's no difference from us than them, except we've got this extra issue that we can't, when given a sufficient reason to stop or moderate, we can't, they can. But when we do this program, we can make the decision not to drink. We can make the choice not to take drugs when we've got this program. So without this program, I'm not like the other people, but with this program, I can choose not to drink. And I can react sanely and realize that if I do drink, I'm going to piss my pants down and smash my life up. And I don't want to do that. So any sane person in the face of that would do that. I mean, I don't get this with heroin addicts. A lot of the time, they're like, well, I never had a drink problem. I'm like, mate, you've just look at all that's happened to you with heroin over the last 10 years. All the things you've had to do, all the prostitution, stealing, all the shame, all the DVTs. He's like, do you think if I got a normal person or one of them other people and subjected them to heroin for 10 years, and then at the end of 10 years say, you know what, I don't know whether you got a drink problem or not, but there's a massive possibility that if you have a drink, you're going to end up back on heroin. Do you think anybody in their right mind is going to end up having a drink? Only crazy heroin addicts will do that. It's insanity. So the fact they're willing to do that shows me that they've got a dependency problem on alcohol. But that's just one for the record. And we will find that this has happened automatically. See, this not wanting a drink or not wanting taking a drug, getting my choice back happens automatically. It just happens. It says we will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us, because that's what we're trying to do at the beginning. I can't stop drinking. I don't want to, but I keep making the choice to have one. So I've got to be able to choose not to. So very quickly, it says when we do this program, we find the power, because remember, powerless was a dilemma. So just want to like break that down a little bit more, that it's saying that in our mind, that we do not have the resolve, we do not have the ability as an alcoholic to make the choice, or an addict, to not drink and take drugs. Even though we know what's going to happen, we still have to do it. We're still totally obsessed with doing that. Now, take that back a little bit further to when before we ever picked up a drink or we ever picked up a drug, there was something maladjusted about us. Now, I know people say that, you know, it's the thing at the moment is it's because you know, you were traumatised, that's what caused it. I don't necessarily believe that. Now, I'm not saying there's not an argument for that, but not everybody that gets traumatised in life becomes an alcoholic, becomes an addict. If you've got brothers and sisters, you might realise they had exactly the same life you did, pretty much, but they didn't become alcoholics and addicts. Their response was very different to yours to the trauma. Now, the trauma may trigger addiction, but I don't think it is the addiction. So I think if you get rid of the trauma, I don't think that's going to make you be able to drink again. Now, again, I've seen people are already going down that path at the minute, because now trauma's the great new, everyone do EMDR and you'll get rid of your trauma, and trauma's your problem. So therefore, two and two, if I've got that, you know, on page 30, if I've got that thing going on, that we learned that we had to fully, that this is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity and death, characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. What, if I had done EMDR and got rid of my trauma, I can drink again. Woohoo! It's obsession. But they're going to do it. That's the danger in them sort of teaching that sort of stuff. Because I don't believe that's the problem. I believe the problem is powerless. I think that we're powerless, which I think is godless, or we're not connected to this inner resource. Now look, dealing with the trauma may help you start connecting with that power. I don't know. I've not really seen too much of that happening. It was the same with therapy, see? When CBT started, it was the same thing. That they said, oh, the reason that you're drinking is because your childhood trauma. So we deal with your childhood trauma, then the alcoholic's going to go, oh, well, I'll be able to drink again then. So if I haven't got all that childhood trauma, then I can drink again. The reason I was drinking was because of childhood trauma. So if I haven't got childhood trauma, I can drink again. And so, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't like the program, I'm going to therapy. Now, again, therapy is a good thing, and it can be a good as well as, but when it's an instead of, it doesn't deal with this power problem. And I'll tell you what else don't deal with the power problem, drugs. Drugs don't deal with this power problem, whether they're street drugs, legal drugs, prescribed drugs. They don't deal with this power problem. Drugs don't give you power. What they do is anesthetize the effects of being powerless. Drugs do not give you power. They make you feel like you got power, but all they do is anesthetize the effects of not having power. So drugs don't work, except give you painkiller. It's just painkiller for the problem. Now, again, don't everyone go throwing their medication away. That's not what I'm saying. But when we break it down a little bit further, what we see is that this is saying that we're powerless. And the lack of power is our dilemma. Lack of power is our problem. And then the book says, where do we find this power? Well, we know it has to be a power greater than this ego self. But it is in us as well. The power is in us. And it says, well, how do we find that power? Now, back up a little bit again. Sorry, I'm getting a bit ahead of myself. What we learned when we were growing up, most of us, again, I was going to do this experiment, but didn't have enough time to speak to people. But in groups, I often say this to people, like, why did you start drinking? And most people go, oh, because I was molested, because I got left, because I was black, because I was white, because my mum left, because this, because that, I felt inferior, because I got bullied at school, blah, blah, blah. And look, all of that stuff, it means make undermine them problems. They're pretty bad problems that need sorting out. But I don't think they're the reason why people drink and take drugs. I think they may have not helped that problem. But then you say to people, well, what is that why you started drinking and taking drugs though? Did you sort of think, oh, you know, I got really abused as a child, so I think I'm going to go and have a pint of lager and make myself feel better? Or I'm going to go and shoot some heroin because I feel a little bit less than, you know, than I should feel, or I feel a little bit not loved and not cared for. No one did. Most of us pretty much went and had a drink and smoked a joint because everyone else was. But then I say to people, then when did you start giving them excuses then? And they think about it and they go, mate, I remember the first time I told somebody it was because of my childhood problems, I had to think about it because they told me that my drug and alcohol use was becoming a problem. And then I had to think, why? And then I think that becomes a bit of a stereotype in our society. You know, I watch it on the news. They say to people, why are you homeless? And they're like, oh, it's because my wife left me. It's because this happened, because that happened. I'm not saying that stuff didn't happen. But a lot of the time, from my experience, you know, through the 12-step working with program, you're like, mate, why are you drinking? Oh, my wife left me. What, you weren't drinking up until then? Well, no, I was drinking then. Well, why did your wife leave you? Because of my drinking. And as you start following it back, it's this stereotype. And again, I'm not having a go at anyone or trying to undermine them problems. But again, I think them stereotypes can give us the wrong idea of the problem. And the danger of that is if you don't understand the problem, then you're going to allow these other solutions to be applied. Now, they're good solutions, but if they're being applied to the wrong problem, they're not good solutions. But if you think this, if you think, you know, childhood problems is the dilemma, then the solution is get rid of your childhood problems. But that's not going to give you the power. So I believe that the power of always lacking the power, and that made me feel very uncomfortable. And when I had a drink, it kind of made me, it was like painkiller. It felt fabulous to me. I loved getting drunk from a young age. I just wanted to get hold of a bottle of cider and chug it as quick as I could. Even though I passed out, pissed myself, I wanted to do it again as soon as possible. So I'm going to say that again. Drugs does not give you power. Whether they're street drugs, legal drugs, or prescribed drugs. What they do is give you, they anaesthetize the problem of powerlessness. So I learned in that moment at the age of 13 or whenever it was, that that drinking is going to make me feel better. And that's the moment I started to prescribe myself drugs, alcohol. That's the moment in my life that I started to self-prescribe for my problem. So whether a doctor's prescribing you drugs or I'm doing it to myself, we're all kind of agreeing that I've got this problem that needs drugs to make me feel better. And see, when I come to AA, they said, well, actual fact, the problem is powerlessness. And we would like to prescribe power to you. But if you're willing to cross this bridge, now I think that bridge is, again, it's like a neural network. If you're willing to come across this bridge at the beginning, then we think that we can help you to find a better solution to your powerless problem than taking drugs to anaesthetize yourself. That we think we can show you a way where you can be abstinent from drugs, which are causing you other problems. Now, again, we know street drugs and totally uncontrolled. I mean, we went into that about, you know, how certain services and that help you control your drug intake, how doctors will help you control your drug intake, but it's not really solving the problem. It's just a method of trying to help balance out your need for power. And again, dependency comes from lack of power. And when you become dependent on other people, it becomes a codependent, it becomes an uneven power thing. And dependency, I don't think, is ever a good thing unless you're depending on the right stuff. And so the program starts to say, look, we want you to come across this bridge from being using drugs and alcohol for your dependency to finding the power. So that bridge is kind of what recovery is. It's the bit, it's the difficult bit where you need, again, that's when you need a good, strong environment around you to help support you from the outside, because it's not yet built on the inside. And it takes a bit of time for your brain to start building that dependency. So we know that people that do go to meetings, do have a program, do have sponsors, do have recovery friends, and a lot of you guys on here that spend time hanging out with each other and talking to each other, we're helping to build that bridge. And eventually, as we cross that bridge and we find the solutions in this book that give us the power to resolve the discomfort, the irritability, the discontent, as we feel that power flow into us, it says. And so we read it again based on that. It says, if we attempted, we recall from it like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. Miracle, I like that, of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not sworn off of it. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky, and this was for Bryony, we're neither cocky nor afraid. We don't have to worry. This is our experience. This is how we react. So as long as we're in fit spiritual condition, it's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. Got a hole in a bucket. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual, and I would like to these days add mental condition. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thou will not mine be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We cannot we can exercise our willpower all we like along this line, all we wish. It is the proper use of will, much as already said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We began to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further. So really, to get across this bridge and to get this treatment in this way, without drugs, it's saying we have to develop this mindset and we have to develop this sixth sense, not five senses, sixth sense. We have to get this sixth sense. And instead of three dimensions, we have to get four dimensions. So that's kind of what we're starting to develop. An extra sense, the sixth sense of this power within us. And also we start to create another dimension to our existence. See, when I see the world in this three-dimensional way, without that sixth sense, in five sense, when I'm just stuck in my physical self, my perception of reality is almost abhorrent to me. I cannot stand it. I need to anesthetize myself to stand being alive. But when I start getting this sixth sense and this fourth dimension, oh, it's better than drugs. much better than drugs. So I'm going to leave it there. There's a lot more we can do. And tomorrow we're going to look at chapter to the agnostics. And it's, again, it's about lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find that power by which we could live. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But how and where were we to find that power? Tune in tomorrow to find out.